Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Sometimes it sounds a little strange to say that you don't want to talk about demons. But so long as you're connected to Krishna, then everything becomes auspicious. So even Krishna's killing of the demons becomes auspicious. Yesterday evening, we were speaking on the different reasons for Krishna's killing of the demons. And we started the discussion and we mentioned and discussed how many reasons?
Three
reasons. So let's have a short revision. And before we do that, just an interesting point that I just thought of now. Many years ago in a particular temple, what we used to do was, after every morning Bhagavatam class, everybody would sit down. After the class was over, the speaker would also sit and everybody would sit in a circle. And then each person in turn would speak one point that he or she heard in the class. Only one point. The next one would speak another point, and another. And everyone was hard put to remember, because you just want to say something and the other person say your point. So then you have to really remember, what is it, what did I hear? And when you know that you have to say it, you hear carefully also, because you know it's going to come now. So then it would go through many rounds like this. Many rounds, and by the time it ended, everybody was surprised how much they could actually recollect. And everybody was surprised how many points came out of the lecture. And together, how much it was that everybody could remember. Sometimes people, devotees complain, oh, I can't remember anything. Right? It's common. We're not expected to. This is Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, we don't have the kind of memory power that used to exist in Satya Yuga or Treta, or even just 150 years ago, for that matter, what to speak of the earlier ages. So yes, we don't have photographic memory. We are not Shruti Dharas who can just hear and remember everything. But the trouble is that we don't try also. That is the catch. If you try hard enough, you can increase your capacity from this much to at least this much. Even though remembering everything would be a tall order, but we can certainly do much more than what we are actually doing now. So it's good to hear attentively and then try to speak. It's interesting that in Prahlad Maharaj's verse, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, Pada, Sevanam, etc., everything begins with Shravanam, which is hearing. Now, after you hear, what should you do? Kirtanam, you should speak it. So whatever you have heard in the lectures, or whatever you read in the books, you should speak to others about it. Then what happens? Smaranam, you remember. So here's another easy way of remembering. Whatever you hear, whatever you read, I am Krishna conscious. You repeat that to somebody. Catch somebody who's willing to listen to you. Even if it'll be on the street. You're not trouble. Or perhaps in trouble, they won't know what you're saying. This is what we heard today in our class. Or among the devotees, or at home. Just repeat. The whole Vedic process of acquiring knowledge is hearing and repetition. Srila Prabhupada called it submissive oral reception. Not oral reception. That is fine, that's not a problem. Oral, A-U-R-A-L, to hear attentively. So we hear attentively and then we remember, okay, now these are the points and now we want to speak it out. So let's revise briefly. What was the first reason for Krishna's killing of the demons? To fulfill his promise made where? Yes, in the Bhagavad Gita. And that promise had how many parts?
Three parts.
What was the first part? Protecting the devotees. Second? Killing the demons. Third? Establishing dharma. So are all these connected with killing of the demons or no? Yes, protection of the devotees is connected to killing of the demons. And even establishment of dharma is connected with killing of the demons. As we discussed yesterday, because the devotees or the non-devotees, the asuras, they do not follow dharma. And neither do they allow anybody else to follow dharma. This is the demoniac nature. So, by killing the demons, automatically Krishna achieved all three purposes. So he has to fulfill his promise. That's the first reason for Krishna's coming here. Second reason? To give pleasure to the devotees. Actually, this threefold promise, the three activities that Krishna has just spoken about in the verse, Paritranaya Sadhana, none of them need the Supreme Lord to be present in his Prakat Leela, as Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago. Why? Srila Prabhupada in one purport explains, as far as destroying the demons is concerned, the material energy can do that. The material energy is capable of doing that. So the demons can be killed like that. Krishna doesn't need to come. As far as establishing dharma is concerned, the saints, the sages, they're doing that. No need for Krishna to come. Krishna empowers the sages and they go and preach everywhere and they establish dharma, uphold dharma. Sometimes the Rajarishis, saintly kings also. And third is protecting the devotees. Do the devotees need Krishna to come down here to protect them? No. Chanting the holy name is sufficient. So either way, Krishna doesn't need to come. But he still does. Therefore, there must be another reason. So what are the three reasons that Krishna doesn't need to come down for these three factors? As far as Paritranaya Sadhana, that to protect the devotees, what is ironical about it? Do the devotees need Krishna to come down to protect them?
No.
Why not? If they chant the holy name offers all protection. And holy name is not different from Krishna. So even if Krishna doesn't personally descend in his form as we know it, but the devotees have the holy name, they chant Hare Krishna and they're protected. Second, what about killing of the demons? Does Krishna need to come down?
No. Material energy.
Material energy can do it. Material energy is so powerful. And third,
dharma samsthapana.
To establish dharma. Who can do that? The saints, the sages, the devotees can do that. Krishna doesn't need to come. But he still comes. Which means that these three reasons are not the most important reasons for Krishna's advent in this world. The main reason is anugrahaya bhaktanam maushan dehamasthitaha bhajate taprishi kriya yashupa tatparokulet. When Krishna comes down, he does so to give mercy to his devotees. And then he performs various extraordinary pastimes which are so attractive that the devotees, they automatically, spontaneously start rendering devotional service to him with great love and devotion on hearing these pastimes. So therefore, the second reason is for Krishna's killing the demons, he does it to give pleasure to his devotees. Just like his stealing of butter, his performing the Rasa Leela, all the pastimes of the Lord are done with the intention of giving pleasure to his devotees. And it works the other way also. Every act of the devotee is done with an intention to please Krishna. That is what Krishna consciousness is all about. Both ways. Krishna wants to give pleasure to his devotees, the devotees want to give pleasure to Krishna. And this is the second reason for Krishna's killing of the demons. What's the third reason?
Krishna likes to kill demons.
Krishna likes to kill demons, which means he also experiences some pleasure. Why? Virasa, yes, Virasa. He also has a fighting tendency within himself. If Krishna did not have the fighting tendency, how would we have it? How would it exist at all if it didn't exist in him? So therefore, Krishna wants to fight, and he doesn't find a suitable opportunity in the spiritual world because nobody is a demon in the spiritual world. So then he comes to the material world to have a good fight. And then various devotees, sometimes devotees play the role of the demons. Sometimes devotees play or act on the opposite side, like Bhishma is a devotee, but he was on the opposite party. So in various ways, when Krishna descends into this world, he also engages in these pastimes of killing the demons, and he fulfills his desire to relish the virras, chivalry, the mellow of chivalry. And we saw that one very important conclusion comes out of this. What is that conclusion? The material world also has a purpose
in Krishna's
Leela. Is it only for the rebellious jivas? Is it like a jail for the rebellious jivas? Yes, it is. But is that the only reason? No. There is another deeper reason too. Because the material world offers a platform and a facility for Krishna to perform some pastimes which normally he could not do in the spiritual world. Because there are some things that don't happen in the spiritual world. Krishna leaving Vrindavan to go to Mathura doesn't happen there. Krishna coming back to Vrindavan doesn't happen there. Krishna's killing of the demons doesn't happen there. So there are some pastimes which can be done only in the material world. So just see how important the material world is. So these are three reasons we discussed. Let's talk today from the reason number four. This is a short one. Nevertheless, it's an important one. The Upanishads declare that the Supreme Lord has been fulfilling the desires of the living entities from time immemorial. So there are some devotees, some people who want to love the Lord. So the Lord reciprocates. So there are very loving exchanges between the devotee and Krishna. But there are some people who are neutral. So Krishna remains neutral to them. Ye yatha maam prapadyante taam stathaiva bhajamya. As we approach Krishna, Krishna reciprocates accordingly. And there are some people who want to be Krishna's enemy. That is their nature, that is their desire. So Krishna says, alright, I will fulfill everyone's desire. Samohansara bhoteshu namit vishyasthina priya. He says, I am equal to all living entities and I envy no one and I am partial to no one. Everyone is the same for me, the devotee, the demon. Because the devotee wants to love me and he wants me to love him, so on her, so then I offer my love to them. Of course, internally Krishna always loves everybody. But he also expresses it in his dealings with his devotees in a way that is similar to what the devotee does. So again, when the non-devotee or the asura thinks that, no, I want to destroy Krishna, he has that inimical tendency, Krishna says, alright, I have become your enemy, come on, let's have a good fight. So he's merely fulfilling the desires of certain living entities who have a hostile or an inimical attitude towards Krishna. So he says, yes, I'll come down as a demon and I'll give you a chance. And then we can fight. Then Krishna fights with the asuras. He enjoys his viras. Sometimes the devotees play that role, as I mentioned. So when Bhishma Dev was on the battlefield and he was shooting arrows that were coming out, hundreds of thousands were shooting out from his bow. Nobody could see which directions the arrows were moving in. It was as if the whole battlefield was filled with an ocean of arrows. Bhishma was very quick and very powerful. And naturally Arjuna was his target. Of course, he had promised that he would not kill the Pandavas. That resolve he had in his mind. But when he was in the battlefield, many arrows would strike Krishna as well. And Srila Prabhupada explains that those arrows of Bhishma that struck Krishna, Krishna perceived them to be offerings of roses and flowers that Bhishma was offering. Of course, there were marks of blood and so on Krishna's body, but that is not real blood, not the, our kind of blood. Because Krishna is Manushan Deham Astita, he's appeared in the human society, so he has to show that something is happening to him when the arrow cuts. So some cuts and some appearance of red and so on and so forth, a little bit. But actually, he felt great ecstasy. Genuine Kshatriyas feel a certain kind of thrill in battle. In danger, in life-threatening situations, they actually get some happiness, some pleasure. Those who are not of that mentality can't understand. We cannot understand what it is for a Kshatriya in those days to be on the battlefield. They just want to be there, they love it, even though it's life-threatening. There are people, somebody told me, acrobats who walk on a rope across two multi-story buildings. Yes, it happened in America recently. This European acrobat, he walked. Do you know how he walked? It's bad enough walking across the rope straight. Of course, they use a stick. Then what did he do? He blindfolded himself. Second, he walked in the reverse direction with his back. And he walked across those narrow rope from one of these New York towers or New York or some place. What is it that makes people do this? Yes? Get some thrill out of it. A little millimeter here and there and he's down. 100 stories, 50 stories. So there were people like that, that kind of thrill. So Krishna also wants to experience that thrill of battle. And Krishna fulfills his desires. So when Krishna is shooting arrows, Krishna is enjoying it. So even in that reciprocation of enmity, there is some rasa. And he's doing it because that person wants it like that. If you want to love Krishna, Krishna will say, very good, I'll reciprocate. If you want to be Krishna's enemy, Krishna says, alright, I'm ready for that as well. Whatever you want. So this is the fourth reason. Reason number five now. We mentioned yesterday that there are two kinds of pastimes of Krishna as stated by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Which are the two kinds of pastimes? Nitya Leela and Naimittika Leela. What are Nitya Leelas? Nitya Leelas are those that go on eternally in Goloka Vrindavan, in the spiritual world. Like? Rasa Leela, the dealings with the gopis, taking the cows out to graze, and so on. And the second category is called Naimittika Leela, which happened occasionally and in the material world. As I gave some instances of that, Krishna leaving Vrindavan, Krishna coming back to Vrindavan. So, killing of the demons is one of those Naimittika Leelas. So in the material world, when Vrindavan appears, we have a combination of the Nitya Leelas and the Naimittika Leelas. Now, the Nitya Leela, generally speaking, is a subject of meditation of very advanced devotees. Very advanced devotees can sit and think about Krishna's, say, Rasa Leela, or Krishna's cowherd grazing, grazing of the cows, or his pastime to the cowherd boys, and so on. So at a very advanced stage, one may be able to spontaneously remember and meditate on these pastimes. The six Goswamis of Vrindavan, for example, they would be absorbed in writing, in discussing, or in meditating upon Krishna's pastimes in Leela. However, not all devotees are so exalted that their minds can spontaneously rest upon the pastimes of Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan. So especially for those who are in this category, who are practicing devotees, not perfected devotees, or practicing devotees, the Naimittika Leelas, and especially the Asuravata Leela, or the pastimes of Krishna killing the demons, are especially significant. So these are especially meant for the practicing devotees, the sadhakas. There's two kinds of bhakti. Sadhana, which is performed by the sadhak. There is a sadhaka and there is sadhya bhakti, where you have the siddha devotees. So you have the sadhak devotees and you have the siddha devotees. So the bhakti that is performed by the sadhaka devotees, the practicing devotees, is called sadhana bhakti, which is what we are all doing. Worshipping the deity, chanting Hare Krishna, doing so many other services, cooking for Krishna and so on. Now the advanced devotees, the sadhya bhaktas, will also do the same. But they'll do it with more intensity, with more focus, with complete devotion. So the sadhana bhakti and the sadhya bhakti. So the nitya leelas are especially meant for the sadhya bhaktas, the siddhas. And the pastimes of the nitya leela, that they are also for us as ordinary devotees, certainly. We should also hear about them. But especially for the sake of purifying our heart of the various anarthas, the unwanted things, lust, greed, anger, envy, pride, illusion in our heart. These Naimittika Leelas, like the Asuravata Leela, are very helpful. So therefore, Krishna performs these types of pastimes to assist devotees like us who are practicing Krishna consciousness, who haven't perfected Krishna consciousness yet, so that by meditating upon them, automatically our heart becomes purified. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in the book called Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, identifies the different types of unwanted tendencies, anarthas, in the heart of the conditioned living entity. And he mentions which kind of, or what pastimes, or which killing of the asuras destroys which type of anartha. And we'll talk about that. So you hear about the killing of putana, that is helpful for destroying one type of anartha. You hear another pastime, let's say Bakasura's pastime, that will be especially helpful for destroying another set of anarthas. So we can go through the list of anarthas and find out which is suitable for me. Of course, when I have devotees go through, they'll say everything is suitable for me. I have all these anarthas. This one, this one, this one, this one, it's all there. Check, make the right checks. Take off all the boxes, it's all there. So therefore, for sadhaka bhaktas, It is very helpful because it helps to purify. So these anarthas are also like demons in the heart, and they have to be slain by Krishna. Just as Krishna was externally killing the demons, we also need Krishna to kill the demons internally. So let's talk from Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is also elaborately, in some of these cases, given purports to the significance of the killing of particular demons. But we don't have time to go that much in detail, so we just get the essence of the killing of each asura and see how that is helpful for us as practicing devotees. Because ultimately, the question may be asked, well, Krishna is killing all these bhakti demons and this and that. What's in it for me? Yes, this question is very common nowadays. What's in it for me? How do I stand to gain? So this is one important thing I stand to gain. By reading the pastimes of Krishna killing the demons regularly, then those anarthas are destroyed. So the first demon that Krishna killed in Vrindavan was Putana. So Putana, as you know, what was she in the previous life? Who was she? Bali Maharaj's sister. So of course there is difference of the Bhakti Vaivarta Puran says she was a sister, and the Garga Samhita says she was a daughter. But either way, maybe in different kalpas it happened. So her name was Ratnamala. And when she saw Vamana Dev, small little boy, coming up, and he looked so charming, and the Vatsalya Bhava, the motherly affection, arose in her heart. And she was thinking, oh, how I wish I could have fed this boy milk, my own milk. So she was thinking like that. She had a very motherly kind of mood towards him. And then, of course, Vamanadev showed his real form. He expanded. And when she saw that huge, gigantic form, and she saw that he had taken away everything from Bali Maharaj, then she became very angry. That motherly affection was now turned into anger. I want to kill this boy because he's destroyed everything. He's taken away everything from my father or brother, depending on which book you refer to. So I wish I could have fed him poison. So be careful of what you wish. Krishna will fulfill it. And if you desire a lot of opulence, be careful, you might just get it. And that could be a risk. So we should always be careful what we pray for to Krishna. One time Jayapataka Maharaj was one of his disciples was telling me that he missed his flight. He was going to the airport, he came back. And then the devotees were very happy. So we were praying that you should miss your flight so you can come back. You can do it as longer. You see, that's why I missed the flight. You see? They said you shouldn't pray like this because Krishna will listen. But then a similar thing happened to me as well. I missed the flight actually, and then I had to come back. And I came back exactly the devotees were saying, we wanted to stay more. But then I said, look, what about the devotees there who are waiting for me? They said, no, our desire was stronger than their desire. Otherwise the plane would have got delayed or something would have happened. And, yeah. So we should be cautious what we ask Krishna for. You know, in this world it's very dangerous to ask for any material benediction because anything can happen. So we should be careful. You know the story of the Kalpavriksha, right? This man was tired, he came tired, he was from a walk, and he was at the edge of the forest, and he sat under a tree. He was very exhausted, and he was sitting there. Oh, I wish, I'm so hungry, I wish I had some food. And lo and behold, there was a big feast in front of him. All of a sudden it appeared from out of nowhere. Oh, it's very nice. So he fed himself nicely. He said, oh, how I wish I had a good bed here to sleep on. And lo and behold, the bed appeared out of nowhere. And he kept desiring these things. Oh, it's nice. And then he realized, this is a wish-fulfilling tree, Kalpavriksha, to which I'm sitting. So he was enjoying himself like that. And then he looked around the forest and a thought crossed his mind. Oh, what if a tiger comes now and eats me? And then what happened? Tiger came. And tiger? End of the story. So be careful what you pray for in this material world. Therefore, it's safer and better to pray for only money, oh, I beg your pardon. Only pure devotional service. That's all we pray for. So in any case, Ratnamala prayed like that. She was reborn as Putana. So she fulfilled her desire, both her desires. She wanted to feed Krishna milk and she wanted to feed him poison also. So then she came as Putana. She appeared as a very beautiful young lady, although in her original form she was a very fierce, ugly demoness. And Krishna obliged him. Because he's fulfilling her desire. He wanted that. He wanted to be like a mother. All right, so you feed me. I will come. You also wanted to feed me poison. Okay, but poison won't kill me. It will kill you. So he sucked out the poison. And Putana suffered terribly. Because when Krishna sucked out the poison and the milk, he also sucked out her life air. She was in excruciating pain. She couldn't hold her assumed form, and she assumed her original form, which is miles long. So the pain that she endured and the fact that she had to die was because she had hoped to kill Krishna. She wanted to be like an enemy of Krishna. So Krishna reciprocated. But at the same time, Krishna saw the sense of motherhood as well. So he fulfilled that. And he gave her this place of a mother, of a nurse in the spiritual world. And we'll come to more of this. We'll discuss this more tomorrow. So anyway, this is a story with Putana. That is how Putana comes in the picture. So what does Putana represent? So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Putana represents the Sudha Guru. Now the Sudha Guru has two understandings. He appears in two types of forms. One as an individual who, in the name of teaching religion or spirituality, teaches sense gratification, or he gives instructions beyond his understanding, or speaks something that is not bona fide, not correct. He gives wrong instructions, wrong teachings to people. So that is like a Sudha Guru. Now that one may think, well, that's about others, but what about me? It's not my anartha. Yes, it is that person's anartha. So if somebody is a Sudha Guru, who is teaching sense gratification or some false philosophy, just like Putana in his heart. But also equally dangerous is the other false guru within our heart. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur calls him the inner guru who leads us for empiric reasoning. We try to calculate by material logic. For example, we analyze the scriptures and we try to think, how is this possible? In my school science, grade 10 or grade 12, I learned about the planets being like this and like this, and here the Bhagavatam says like this. How is that possible? It's not possible. So what the Bhagavatam says is wrong. I can't accept it. So when we try to speculate and try to understand the words of the scriptures by material logic, by material reasoning, we get bewildered. And we lose our faith if our faith is not very strong. This is a very common question, and I'm sure all of us has asked this question sometime, especially when we are hearing from 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. How many of you have read 5th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam? Please raise your hands. Oh, very few. Very few. How many of you have started reading Srimad Bhagavatam? Okay, so work in progress. You must finish. Now my next question is, how many have really understood 5th canto of Bhagavatam? Very hard. If you want, in the sense that, if you want to understand the district, where is the Sumeru mountain? And where is this Jambu Dweep, and how are all these dweepers interconnected? And where is the moon is there in the sky? Have we gone into the night sky and look? Moon is there, and the sun is, stars are here. Which is this? Which is that? We confuse and we try to compare the two and we get bewildered. How is this possible? Some devotees even left the moon because of such things. And Prabhupada said, no, you can't go to the moon in these bodies. One devotee, I think, right? He actually left Krishna consciousness and went away. Because, you know, how is it possible that all our science and all our technology is working and this is saying something completely opposite? So whose problem is it? It's not the Bhagavatam's problem, it's our problem. That we are not able to understand the Bhagavatam. Because Srimad Bhagavatam is transcendental word. It speaks from a certain point of vision, which is beyond what we can understand with our limited senses. Even this material world cannot be understood by us. So how can we understand things beyond? So we should not try to apply material reasoning. So whenever these things come in our heart, these doubts, we understand as Putana. Putana is, especially the modern day people want scientific proof for everything. Yes? What is proof? So what is the evidence? So this type of thing wants this kind of evidence, empirical evidence. That's the Putana in our heart. So that doubt is hung on somebody, especially when you're talking to devotees, people who are just becoming devotees, and they can't get over it, then tell them, read Putana's scheme. Read it regularly, read every day. And this doubting mentality, this analyzing mentality will go away. Analysis paralysis. You heard of this syndrome? Analysis paralysis syndrome. You analyze something too much, then you get paralyzed. Materially, spiritually, you get paralyzed. So better not to try to analyze too much from a material point of view. The next asura is Shakatasura. And by the way, when people say blind faith, religion is just dogmatic, now it talks about, this is Putana speaking. So when somebody is speaking like this, you can say, oh, Putana Vadana is speaking through this person. Figuratively, of course. So the next demon is Shakatasura. Now the Shakatasura demon was very unique because he had a body that was made of air. Shakata means cart. Actually, when Krishna moved from Gokul to Vrindavan, they came to a place in Vrindavan and they assembled their carts in a semicircle. And then they sat inside that semicircle when they first arrived in Vrindavan from Gokul. So the cars are called Shakat. So they organize the Shakat in such a way. It's called Shakatikara. And do you know what that place is known today is?
Shakatikara.
How many of you have gone to Vrindavan? Okay. And you've gone by road from Delhi? And when you take at Vrindavan the left turn, that point is called Shakatikara. Actually, that's a deviation from the word Shakatikara. Because the carts were there. So anyway, the word Shakata means cart. So what happened was that he was a demon. And his name was Utkacha. He was a son of Hiranyaksha. And one time, he broke trees in the ashram of Lomasha Rishi. He created some kind of disturbance there. So Lomasha Rishi became very upset because his whole meditation and sacrifices and everything were disturbed. And he cursed him that then you get the body of air, airy body. After all, there are these eight elements in material nature, of which air is also one of them. You get an airy body. So he was cursed. But then when he begged forgiveness, he said, I can't change the curse entirely, but I bless you that in the next Manvantara, you will be liberated, you will be delivered by the touch of the lotus feet of the Lord. So when there are curses uttered by great devotees, those curses are not actually curses. They are blessings. They are great benedictions. They always cause the welfare of the person who is cursed. So anyway, as a result of Lomasha Rishi's curse, Shakatasura appeared in Vrindavan in the form of a cart. And Krishna was placed under that cart when Mother Yashoda was busy with so many things. Because she had many household things to do. She couldn't stay with Krishna all day long. Although everything else was also for Krishna. And then Krishna was thinking, okay, here is this demon. Krishna understood that this is a demon. Even though he was a small child, his godhood was not taken away from him. Srila Prabhupada explains that even as a small child in the lap of Mother Yashoda, Krishna came a fierce demoness like Putana. Which goes to show that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in all situations. just because he's a baby, it doesn't mean his strength is reduced. A human baby has hardly any strength, correct? But that same baby, when it becomes a youth, it has a lot of strength. But for Krishna, there is no difference. Krishna as a baby is equally strong as Krishna as a youth. That is what it means to be a transcendental Supreme Lord. So that he was under Shakata, under the Shakata, under the cart, and then he kicked his little leg. With one touch of Krishna's toe, the whole cart, which was loaded with so many vessels and other heavy objects, fell to the ground. The cart broke to pieces, and everybody came rushing to hear what the sound was all about, what had happened. And they saw Krishna lying there unharmed in the midst of all the big pots and pans and whatnot. And they were surprised, what happened? How did this huge cart fall to pieces? And Krishna is unharmed, he's just sitting happily smiling. And some children who were there, they said, yeah, this is what happened. Krishna just kicked the cart and it fell. Said, no, they thought it was childish prattle. How can it be? This little baby, how can it kill, how can he destroy this huge cart? So anyway, Krishna fulfilled the curse and the blessing of Lomasharishi. So what does Shakatasura stand for? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says it stands for the load carrying mentality arising out of old and new bad habits from this life and previous lives. It also stands for lethargy, dullness, false pride. How many of us have some bad habits? Right? Very common. And many times these bad habits, you don't have to tell, but in your mind you know. So these bad habits many times interfere with our Krishna consciousness, don't they? Is it easy to give up those bad habits? No. You see, it is very easy to give up good habits, but very difficult to acquire new habits, good habits. It is very easy to acquire bad habits, very difficult to give up bad habits. Is it too confusing? No. Okay, who will say these 4 points? Okay, yes.
Very difficult to get good habits.
To acquire good habits, okay? It's
very difficult to It's very difficult to give up bad habits.
Okay, good. Then?
It's very easy to get bad habits.
Yes.
And it's very hard to.
No, it's very easy to give up
good habits.
Yes. Okay, somebody else, one more time. So that it remains in the mind.
Very difficult to give up bad habits.
Very difficult to give up bad habits?
No.
Yes. That's right. And? You have to say all four. It's very easy to acquire good habits. Okay, one more time. 4 things about habits. All of us have good habits and we have bad habits also.
Yes. To get good habits.
Hmm. It's very easy to give up good habits. Okay.
It's very easy to acquire bad habits.
Hmm.
And it is very easy to
give up. So maybe when you go back, you write it in your habits. Okay? You go back and write it. And make a list of your bad habits. You don't have to share it with others. Your private diary between you and the super soul. And then he said, okay, my God, I have this bad habit, this bad habit, or this also. So then you think of Krishna stealing Shakatasura. And if some particular bad habit is especially troubling you, then you read this Leela of Krishna killing Shakatasura. Read it regularly. And those particular bad habits will go away. There is a problem in India that if you do a certain activity in succession 12 times, then it becomes a habit. And you get used to doing it many times. Let's say you develop the habit of what?
Okay.
That's my quote, so as devotees, I'm saying.
Getting up late in the morning.
You do it once, you do it twice, and you do it many times, then it is very hard to change that habit. Then you feel like getting up late all the time. But then if you want to change it and get a good habit of rising early, it's very difficult. So like that you can think. And then try to read up this pastime of Krishna's killing of the demons and ensure that we don't form bad habits and we can give up all the bad habits and we acquire the good habits. Habits are very powerful. Habits are formed by repetitively performing certain actions. Prabhupada says, good thoughts actually starts with food. Good food leads to good thoughts. Good thoughts lead to good actions. Good actions lead to good habits. Good habits lead to good character. What is there for good food can also, you can substitute that also by good company, good association. Okay, now, somebody can say that. Good association, stroke, good food leads to good thoughts. Good thoughts leads to good actions. Good actions lead to good habits. Good habits lead to good character. And good character in Krishna consciousness leads to Goloka Vrindavan. So it's very important for us to follow this chain of events, phenomena. Everything depends on the kind of company we keep, the kind of atmosphere we are in, the kind of food we eat, and so on and so forth. In any case, whatever the bad habits that we accumulated, we can pray to Krishna by hearing the Shakatasura Vada Leela. These are not very long narrations, so it's quite easy for us to do it on a regular basis. It also stands for lethargy, laziness, that is, inaction, dullness, false pride. Spiritual lethargy is very dangerous. Yes? Materially also people can be very lazy. But you may find people who are materially very active, but they are spiritually very lazy. And you may find people who are materially inactive in the sense that they are not engaged in fruitive activities, but spiritually they are fully absorbed in Krishna conscious activities. So if you also see that we are getting dull, we are losing our enthusiasm in Krishna consciousness, we are feeling lethargic, that's also a good time to start reading this pastime of the killing of Shakatasura. You sometimes feel your enthusiasm diminishing and you feeling lazy?
Yes.
Happens?
Yes.
So you chant the holy name better, hear better, and this is one thing that we could try also. Hear the pastime of Shakatasura. The third demon, Trinavarta. Trinavarta also, according to Brahma Vaivarta Puran, was a king of Pandyadesh, whose name was Sahasraksha. And one time he came before Durvasa Muni. Now you know Durvasa Muni. He gets angry very fast and curses when he gets angry. He came before him improperly clothed, actually without any clothes. So Durvasa Muni, he chose of all people Durvasa Muni to come before them. So he cursed him to live on earth for 100,000 years. And when he begged for forgiveness, he says, okay, at the end you will be killed by Krishna. So that's how he became Trinavarta. You know that he came as a whirlwind. And the whole of Braj Vrindavan was full of this whirling dust. And every the dust went into the eyes of the Brajvasi, they couldn't see anything. They were all crying out, Krishna, help, help. And Mother Yashoda was looking out for Krishna. Where is Krishna? She went practically mad with anxiety. Krishna was nowhere to be seen. They couldn't see what was happening. And the whirlwind demon, he just took Krishna higher and higher and higher and higher and higher. And Krishna was having fun. As he was being lifted. You see, that's why these things are popular, the Ferris wheel and all that. It's all coming from Krishna. Because Krishna likes to play all these things. So he wanted some swing up and down. And, you know, people do paragliding and what's it? They jump from the aircraft.
Skydiving.
And skydiving and all these things, right? It's all coming from Krishna. Krishna was the original skydiver. He was the original glider. So he went up, Trinavarta took him up, and then Krishna caught him and squeezed him to death. He was getting so heavy, and Shakadasu couldn't retain his assumed form as a whirlwind. He assumed his horrible looking form and fell to the ground with a thud. And Krishna was peacefully sitting there, as if nothing has happened. He was enjoying it. So Trinavarta, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, stands for false pride due to scholarship. And it gives rise, this tendency gives rise to all sorts of wrangling debates and argumentation and quarreling and so on and so forth. And especially the preaching and following of such philosophies that negate the existence of God or negate the personality or the form of God, like Mayavad and so on. That is also considered a manifestation of the Trinavarta within us. We have a demon sitting within us. For those of us who have not been exposed to these other philosophies in the past, in this life or in previous lives, and we take to Krishna consciousness in a straightforward way, we will think, what's all the whole thing about? Why is this such a big issue? But I quote this often, there's this one devotee I know who is a very senior devotee. I'm talking about a conversation I had with him in 95-96, the centennial was going on. And he said, I have been in this movement for more than 20 years at that time. And he said, I have always chanted my rounds. I followed the four regulative principles. I studied Prabhupada's books. I'm very particular about my food. I'll only eat Krishna Prasadam, etc., etc. And he knows the philosophy quite well also. He's a good speaker. But he says, sometimes I get this doubt. How can Krishna God have a form? He says, before I became a devotee, I was associated with the Mayavadi organization. And so much of that has gone in. But even after 22 years or 21 years, a very rigid practice of Krishna consciousness, sometimes a thought comes and haunts me. How is it that God can have a form? Now, we will not be able to relate to that problem. We say, well, what's the problem? If God has a form, okay, why should anyone have sleepless nights over it? But for those who have gone through that indoctrination, that Jnanonmukhi Sukriti is very strong, then it becomes a torment. There are many devotees who have come to Krishna consciousness, which is a very personalistic philosophy, from an impersonal background. And it's difficult for them. Personally, I know several devotees who we were preaching to, and when they have been exposed to such a background, it's very hard for them to get convinced and for us to convince them. It's very rare to find, if at all, any devotees who become impersonalists. But it's very common, not that common, but it does happen frequently, of people following the path of impersonalism and monism becoming devotees. There are famous instances in the scriptures too, but we won't go into that too much. But suffice it to say at this level, at this point, that this tendency of even advocating or thinking of these ideas when we're exposed to them, it's very dangerous. Therefore, Mahaprabhu says, Mayavati Bhasha Shumile Hai Svaranash. If we hear this Mayavati philosophy and these other all kinds of strange philosophies, it will destroy our bhakti. Sarup Damodar says in the Chaitanya Charitamrita that even if a Mahabhagavat hears this philosophy on a regular basis, it corrupts his mind. in relation to a devotee called Bhagavan Acharya. So these different philosophies, they cause agitation in our faith. So one should be careful. And especially imagine the trouble that it will be caused if somebody becomes a scholar in that philosophy and becomes proud that I'm such a big scholar. And we know of instances that involve the lives of our acharyas when they interacted with such so-called scholars. Can you give an instance of when the Lord or the devotees interacted with such so-called proud scholars? Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, very nice. And Mahaprabhu met him, he heard Vedanta from him for 7 days. He was proud a little bit. In fact, why was he proud? He told Gopinath Acharya, who was an intimate associate of Mahaprabhu, he told him that I think this is a very young sannyasi. It is very hard for him to maintain his vows. Let me offer him a higher order of sannyas. He is just Bharati Sampradaya, but I want to give him a higher order. And plus, I'll teach him Vedanta for 7 days. Very presumptuous of him. Here is the Supreme Lord. Of course, at that time, he didn't know that Mahaprabhu was the Supreme Lord. So, but he was proud of his scholarship that I can put this young sannyasi and keep him safely. What other examples? Keshav Bharati. Not
Keshav Kashmir.
Keshav Kashmir. Keshav Bharati was the spiritual master of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Keshav Kashmir. Who did he have a discussion with? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Keshav Kashmir was left stunned. That's a beautiful pastime. I would suggest you read this in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Who else?
Prakashananda Saraswati.
Prakashananda Saraswati and all the sannyasis of Varanasi, their hearts were changed by Mahaprabhu. Similarly, there were these Digvijay Pandits, the scholars who would go around challenging everybody. Prabhupada explains in a couple of places that just like today you have these Olympic Games and sports competitions and so on. In the earlier days, there used to be competition for scholarship between scholars. There used to be debates. And there were ground rules for the debate. And there was a lot of integrity in these debaters, even if they held completely opposite views. If one was defeated by the other, he accepted the philosophy of the other, of the victor. That's how Ramanujacharya and Madhvacharya converted many, many very great, renowned scholars who were advocating other types of philosophy. And they challenged him to debate, Ramanuja as well as Madhva. They lost, and they became their disciples. There are many instances like this. And we know even from the lives of the six Goswamis, Digvijay Pandit came to Vrindavan, and they used to have a Vijay Patra. Everybody they defeated would sign and say, yes, I have been defeated by Roop Kaviraj or whatever his name was. And then he came to Vrindavan just to get the sign of Sanatana and Rupa Goswami. So Roop Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, they are interested in mundane wrangles and such debates. Waste of time. So they said, they are very humble. Of course, you are greater than us. Yeah, I have lost you. They didn't even bother to debate. Just sign there. Sanatana Goswami. Rupa Goswami. And then this Pandit heard. I heard they have a young nephew. He's only a boy, but I heard he's very scholarly. I might as well nip it in the bud, might as well get his signature right away, so that later on he doesn't become a threat to my supremacy. So he went to Jiva Goswami. Jiva Goswami was not inclined to do it also, like his uncles. But the scholar said, look, your uncles have also signed here. Then Rupa Goswami got upset. He said, I beg your pardon, Jiva Goswami got upset. He said, how can this person be so offensive to my uncles? He doesn't know their greatness. He thinks he's defeated them. They talked out of humility and he's speaking like this. He said, all right, I'll debate with you. And then he thoroughly defeated him. And he went away, didn't know what had happened. And then Rupa Goswami heard about it, he reprimanded Jiva Goswami. He said, Jiva, you're not fit to live in Vrindavan. Vrindavan is a place of humility. Vrindavan is not a place where you want to exhibit your scholarship and your learning and debate with people and defeat them. And Jiva Goswami did not protest. What would be undone? But I did for you, I didn't do for myself. Right? Oh, but he did this and he did that, he didn't protest. He accepted it and went. It is only by the intervention of Sanatana Goswami that Jiva came back. So anyway, we see examples of many, many such scholars. So similarly, for us, what does this mean for us? That if we have this past baggage that we carry from our life before Krishna consciousness of different philosophies, if that starts coming up, read of the killing of Trinavarta. In case we get a little learned about the Shastras and we start feeling that, you know, I'm such a good scholar, perhaps I can take such good class, okay, we should read this pastime of Krishna killing Trinavarta. Because that demon is coming up in us, oh, I'm a great scholar. So then we have to read this. Ultimately, of course, Krishna is pleased by humility. He is not pleased by learning. And from Bhagavad Gita, we understand that the very first symptom of learning is humility. Yes, Vidyavinis, apart from that, where he talks about Amanitvam Adambitvam. Yes? When he talks of the different characteristics of knowledge. And he's humble. So the first symptom of knowledge is humbleness or humility. So whenever you find this coming up in our heart, then we should be very careful. And say, this Trinavarta is coming up in my heart. So I better read this Krishna's theme of Trinavarta to curb my pride or the other anartha. So now it's 10 to 6. What we lose, we'll stop here.